Well, something that's always a hot topic, at least in my world, is how churches can better manage their finances. And there are several trends that we're seeing, and we wanted to unpack some of those and talk about whether they're good for churches or less than stellar. Let's talk about some of the most important financial trends and financial management for churches this year. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right Podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we are talking about church financial management and some of the things that are changing right now in the world. We're doing this at the end of 2024, and I'm an executive pastor at my church. And I had been out of the lead pastor role at a church for 5 years or so. And frankly, yeah, there's been a lot of changes in just that short amount of time from a pre-COVID world to a post-COVID right. world, and among other things. Lots has
technology
changed.
Technology,
we thought it'd be a good conversation for us to jump into here today and just kind of give you some tips and advice that we have picked up that would help you and your church to better steward your finances there. So should be a good conversation, Ian.
Yeah, not probably as exciting as some of the other ones, but very important.
What are you talking about? Oh my goodness.
To you it is.
I take offense at that. I eat, breathe, and sleep this kind of stuff, man.
I said to some. Yeah. So anyway, it's vital is where I was going with that, is that I think it can be overlooked. When people think, I think traditionally, and I think a lot has, of course, changed from back in the day when our parents grew up in churches. And, obviously there's more technology now. There's more moving parts to churches' financial management. So, no, very important. A lot of churches screw this up and are financially unhealthy because of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so much stress that comes into the life of church leaders when you're in that kind of a position. I know from experience, having been in those kinds of places.
Yeah.
And this isn't to say that we are, I haven't mastered all of this. It's not so that we know perfectly, but there's some tips we have gleaned as we've kind of on along there, but I want to
you as an executive pastor too, Thomas, I'll be curious to ask you about a lot of them because, you're an executive pastor at a good sized church that deals with a lot of people who are giving and, not a role that I've had. So, we have some interesting statistics too. At least one that caught my eye, I wanted to share here in a minute whenever we're ready. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about the audience and alluding to the fact that they might find this boring, but not our audience, not the Reach Right audience. I was doing an interview for a new church administrator. We're hiring for that role. If you live in Hawaii and you're interested in being a church administrator, hit me up. But we're hiring for that role. And the first interview that I did, awesome gal, love her. It may work out pretty well. But she said, for fun, one of the things that I do is I am a volunteer treasurer at an insurance options club. I'm like, you do what? And like she says, she loved to do this. And it was like I was like, you're perfect. Like that's perfect for a church administrator. And if that's you in our audience,
my point, yes,
you have. So I don't know about that. We love our finance nerds out there. So.
That's right. We do love them.
All right. Hit us with the statistics, Ian. What have we been thinking about here when it comes to church financial management?
Oh, there's a lot of statistics when it comes to church finances, but this one was at least intriguing to me. And according to Church Salary, churches of 50 people saw an average of about $2,500 dollars a person, to be specific, $2,589.
Annually? Is that what that means? $2,500 annually?
Yes, annually. Okay. So when you average a 50-member church to what the average person gives, that's $129,432. And then there's a lot in between. It goes from 150, this report, to 1,000 to 2,000 to the very high end, 5,000 people, which would be a mega-sized church that is bringing in over $11 million, but that average was a little smaller, not a big variance, but the average person at a larger 5,000 member church compared to 50 member church was giving $2,340. So about almost $100 less, give or take there. So
I thought it was closer to two. What was the first number?
Oh, I guess so. 2340 at the 5,000 member, 2589. You're right. That is closer to 200. So yes.
Yeah. A little over two, almost 250 actually. So I thought that was interesting that, I guess not surprising when you think about it. Like we think about, you know, mega churches and those things. And it's like, we assume that they have bigger givers, and I'm sure that they do have many bigger givers, but I imagine because of the anonymity and the, that sometimes comes with mega churches and the way that people can kind of come in and out easier without ever really being seen or known.
Right.
I think that doesn't surprise me that they
it's a bit less,
less likely to give. And, you know, they have the reputation sometimes in mega churches of being so financially focused. It hasn't been my experience really, but some are, I'm sure, and some aren't.
Yeah.
But, I find that pretty interesting, but at the same time, not surprising. But I think we saw that on every level, like the larger the church, the smaller the per person giving was, I think is what we discovered as we unpacked.
So I thought it was interesting, like you said, not shocking, but interesting for sure.
Yeah,
so
totally. What else did we find? Anything else in there that stood out?
Well, so maybe this is one that, and we're going to get into this here, so it might be a good segue into some of these things we'll be discussing. But according to the U.S. bank study via Vanco, which a lot of people are familiar with Vanco, 76% of people don't carry more than $50 in cash at any given time. This makes it extra important that your church has online giving options. And I will just say this, that I think most people that, that just heard that would say, yeah, that's a no-brainer to have online giving. I still come across so many churches that don't. The majority of churches do. Let me make that clear. But I would say, you know, in a given month, maybe 10% of the churches I talk to, and I talk to literally thousands in a given year, still don't. So it's interesting. Yeah.
How much money's in your wallet right now, Ian?
You know, it's so funny. For the first time, I usually don't have any cash. but I ended up selling something on the marketplace, an old used item in our house. I have about 30 some odd dollars in cash, which is very rare for me. But
less than the $50 that it said.
It's
right there,
less, so it holds true. It holds.
I'm a little higher because I think someone gave me same kind of thing. Someone gave me some money just the other day, so I have $200 in my back pocket. But
look at that.
Yeah, I think that if you are not, well, we'll get into some of the tips and financial management stuff. We'll talk about why that's an important stat as we get on.
Yeah.
So
why don't we get into that? I'll ask you the first one as an executive pastor, Thomas, and someone that rebuked me for saying this might be boring to some. What about building an emergency fund for your church and how to go about that? That sounds important, actually.
So I think that there's a sweet spot for this, right? I think all churches should have an emergency fund. I think every organization, every family, anybody that has an account should have some kind of an emergency fund. I don't know. I bet a lot of our audience are Dave Ramsey people.
Yeah.
He talks about your first little fund of $1,000.
Yeah.
And then after you've got out of debt, then you try to get like 6 months of an emergency fund for your family. 3 to 6, somewhere in that range, depending on what your job is like and those kinds of things. For churches, I think that there can definitely be too little, and there can also be too much in your emergency fund. And that might be surprising to some people to hear that there can be too much in there. And it depends on the church, but I think that sweet spot is 3 months. That's what churches should be shooting for as the amount of money they have, 3 months worth of expenses in your church. So if something happened like another pandemic or your online giving system gets compromised and nobody trusts you for a while or whatever it could be, you know, these worst case scenario ideas, understanding that they'll almost certainly won't have a situation where zero money will come in. But if that does happen, that your church could still meet all of your payment needs, keep your lights on, pay your mortgage or rent, pay your salaries and those things for a 3 month period.
Yeah.
I think that's just to be on the safe side. You want to make sure you have at least that 2 months. I'd feel nervous about just in case. So on the other end though, a lot of churches are tempted to, like, you know, the more the merrier with this, right? Like if I have 6 months, that's better. If we have 5 years, that's really awesome to have just tons of money. But I think that misses out on what our assignment is as right. a church. Is not
made
to
me think of limiting your outreach and yeah, those exactly. types of things. Like, yeah,
if you have a year of money in reserves, my question, and I think what your council or board should be asking is, are we stewarding and investing this in the way that our people want us to, or are we, even if it's for good intentions, building bigger barns? Are we trying to, you know, save up more money yeah. for that rainy day and not investing it? Kind of like you yeah. think about the parable of the talents of like, are yeah. we burying what we have and not investing right. it in the best investments we can make? So
that's good.
Are there exceptions to this? Absolutely. So my church, for instance, we have about a year in our emergency fund, but it isn't really an emergency fund. It is a emergency slash building fund is what it is. So we have a buildingless church. We meet in a public school yeah. cafeteria. We've done it for 23 years. That's where we've been the entire time, never had our own space. And so we're in East Honolulu, which is one of the most expensive parts of the most expensive cities of the most expensive states in the entire country. So like just real estate is very challenging, very limited here. And so we are trying to squirrel away and invest some of that money for that purpose. But for a typical church outside of your building fund, if you were designating something just for emergency to kind of keep things rolling, 3 months is the number as far as I'm concerned.
That's good. Well, this next one here I'll ask you about. It's important to engage church leadership in financial decisions.
Is that a question? Are you not sure about that or not? If we should...
No, I think it is important. I actually said it in part a question and also just like, yeah, it is important in yeah. my tone there. So, yeah.
So I've worked with different kinds of churches that do yeah. this differently. I lean very heavily on the side of involving your church leaders in your financial decisions and not yeah. having one person make these kinds of choices. And this has been yeah. so interesting for me. I came on as executive pastor at a church just a few months ago, and I'd say we leaned a little bit less towards involving yeah. leaders in financial decisions, and just kind of a few people would kind of just kind of make decisions on things. And it wasn't there was no unhealth or anything there.
Yeah.
It's just how we did things. But I think there's something about the buy-in that comes when we're talking about these kinds of things. I can be a relatively persuasive person. I know. So like, maybe this is just me and how I'm wired, is that I can usually cast vision for something if I believe in it. And if I talk to our other leaders, like usually I find that they're on board with the financial decisions that I want to make. And it's partly because I'm pretty conservative with this kind of stuff too. And I would take it like, if I make a compelling case for something and the rest of my team has pause about it, I mean, I think biblically that's something we should be honoring of, right? We should yeah. maybe hit pause together. And it's only happened a couple of times in my ministry, like where I have felt passionately about something and then we had to slow down a little bit because
yeah.
other people weren't quite on board yet or not comfortable. I just think it's an advantage to do that. I think in the yeah. end, we come up positive. Now, maybe you're listening to this episode and you're on the totally opposite end of the spectrum, that mm-hmm. you have a polity in your church that's set up where if you buy staples, it needs to go through board approval. And yeah. you have like a, you know, it'll be a month process to see if you can staple something or not.
Staples.
You know, I think that obviously is untenable. It's laughable. Yeah. And like, but
yeah.
I don't know. We don't want to get too into, we have so many clients that we've seen that are maybe not that extreme.
No, but I've heard, and this is what I was going to say to interject, Thomas, you know, of course you and I both have spoken with hundreds and hundreds of pastors, ministry leaders, but I also get, one of the unique things is I talk to mostly pastors and ministry leaders, but I will talk to often, since we have services that we offer at a price, I will talk to financial decision makers, someone maybe that's a chairman of the board or someone, a trustee or something, and I will hear from both pastors and that financial type, that person with the financial role, mm-hmm. I will hear the pastor sometimes say, and I will say, and it's not to pick on Mainline, it usually is more of a mainline church that where the pastor does not, or pastors aren't involved in any of the financial planning or decisions,
yeah.
and they're viewed only as someone that works with the people and deals with mm-hmm. people situations and ministry, hands-on ministry situations. And I've heard even financial leaders say, oh yeah, no, our pastor, he's a pastor. He doesn't have anything to do with these financial decisions. So,
yeah,
you know, I've heard of that. And I think there's a meeting in the middle is the point. Yeah. That I would make there. So, yeah.
I think that here's what I found is that growing churches equip their pastors to have a lot of autonomy, but there are probably certain thresholds that you want to involve other people in some of those conversations. And it's going to be different for different size churches.
Not
a church
staples.
Of 50. Yeah. Absolutely not staples. A church of 50, it might be anything over a couple of hundred dollars. A church of 5,000, it might be anything over $10,000 that you have to get the council involved. I don't know what it is for your church, but establish that threshold. And then anything over that threshold, whether it's a one-time fee or an ongoing expense, that's when it's good to involve people in those conversations there.
And this next one I won't ask in question form because it is I'd say even more of a no-brainer. Set up online giving solutions. Yes, please. Yes. If you don't have that at your church. So
it's set it up. And I'm going to assume that most of the people that are techie enough or like involved enough to listen to this podcast already have that done. Right. So I assume that you have set up an online giving system. My advice here is to lean into your online giving system.
Right.
I imagine a lot of us, I know in churches, our church wrestles with this, is that we have been doing things a certain way since our founding. We have always passed plates, for instance, right? I'm not opposed to it necessarily. I've made a video that we can link to here that talks about why you probably don't need to do that anymore. And for most churches, it doesn't make sense. But I know these are hard things to change, right? To do that kind of stuff. But here's the fact is that the area that I'm in, where the church that I am an executive pastor at, we lean a little bit on the older side. I think our average age is probably in our late 40s or something like that. We are getting younger as a church, but that's who we are. But even at our church, over 75% of all of our church's revenue comes in online. But when we talk about giving in church, it's primarily in the in-person form. Leave it in the buckets, the plate's going to pass by, those things. So what I would encourage you to do is really think about that. Like if the lion's share of your revenue is coming in online, then talk more about online. And it's not going to get less. Like we're not going to see less and less money come in that way. It's always going to keep growing. My church has recently just really leaned into this. We just made a pivot in our online giving system because it gave us some more options. I would really encourage every church that's listening to encourage primarily recurring gifts. So that's how I give, I do a recurring gift on the first of every month. And that is so helpful for churches to be able to have kind of a amount that we know is set up as a recurring gift, even if if someone isn't around on Sunday, that people give that way. So we really encourage that. And then I'd also lean into alternative methods of giving. That was one of the main reasons why we chose the company that we did. But they allowed us to have people give cryptocurrency stock through donor advised funds or DAFs, as well as recurring and one-time ACH checks, those kinds of things, credit cards. All that is all included with it. To me, it makes a lot of sense right now to really lean into those things. In just the first month or so, we've already had a crypto gift and a stock gift that is in process right now.
Wow.
Some of the cool things about those is they're considerably larger on average when someone's going to give stock and go through those steps. There's a lot of tax advantages for that as well. So absolutely lean into this. I think it makes a huge opportunity. There's lots of great companies and we don't have any kind of company allegiance or anything here on the right online giving company or anything. We've worked a lot with Tithely over the years. I currently am working with Overflow at my church has been great. Pushpay is fantastic. A lot of times within your church management software, there's a good solution, So the point is lean into online giving, I would say.
Yeah. That's good. It's a good way to put it. Yeah. So, and this one also seems very normal. This next one here is you should budget based on your church size. Obviously, and we gave that stat at the beginning about, 50 member churches and what their their average person gives compared to 5,000 and what that equals in a given year.
So I think that the main advice I have here is obviously it's going to be on your church size. Your revenue is going to be dependent on how many people are in your church there. But I think the key is just budget. That's actually something that's important. And I find surprisingly many churches don't really do this very well or even forecast or any of those kinds of things. And this is an exercise we are walking through for our staff right now. And one of the things that I found is that when we don't budget, there's just so many questions on whether we are able to do these things or not, or what are we allowed to do, what aren't we allowed to do. And so what we did is we had all of our volunteer and paid staff, so people that are in our staff meetings, every one of them was responsible for a budget in their area that they drew up and kind of prayed about and said, hey, these are the places I want to invest, and I want to take these people to coffee more, and I want to do this book with my leaders, and we want this piece of equipment. And they all kind of prayed and presented a budget, and not everything they asked for got approved necessarily, but having everybody go through this process together, it was empowering for everybody as well as kind of permission granting once we've done this. And I just can't wait to see it kind of roll out as we get past the finalizing of the budget, and then next year, people actually moving based on what they planned for. So if you're not doing that, really lean into budgeting this year, I'd say.
Well, and that frees people up for ministry, makes them feel better about what they're doing, and that helps churches grow. So there you go. So, but last but not least, promote generosity while practicing good stewardship and good financial management.
Yep. So I think when I say this here, I'm talking about just talking about generosity and giving and tithing and what that means in your church. A famous pastor once told me, don't ever apologize for talking about giving. And it was transformational for me because I would have been one of those pastors that would say, oh, I know you're here for the first time and I'm sorry, but I have to do this. We're going to talk about giving today. And no, it doesn't, like, giving is a blessing. Like, to learn about giving, it is transformational for the person that's giving. Jesus talks about this. It's better to give than to receive. We know this, right? So it's like, we shouldn't ever apologize for it. So as a pastor, as a church leader, if you hear anything out of this, please hear, do not apologize. Do not be afraid to talk about giving. In love and for the right motives and not to, you know, it's always worst when you're talking about it because, oh no, we aren't going to be able to make rent if I don't talk about giving this month.
Right.
Like, so that's not the context to do it. But if you're in the right context and the right heart, I think talking about it is something that you should do. And in part of talking about it, don't be afraid to share some of the internal stuff with your church. Have a business meeting, maybe bring it up in the tithes and offerings about, you know, some of the costs and expenses and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
People can handle more of that than you give them credit for a lot of times.
Right.
So I think we maybe avoid some of these topics, but I think people are interested, at least the nerds like me, we're interested in what some of these numbers look like, what they mean for us. So the main thing is don't be afraid to talk about some of these things.
Absolutely. And again, that's just, I think you said it's transformative for the giver. We want to give people the opportunity to be blessed by giving and to see God work in their lives through that. And you're right. Traditionally, for a lot of churches, it's been a difficult thing for them to address with their conversations. But we've seen the churches that do, they are the most financially healthy too, and often do the most ministry. And that's the takeaway at the end of the day. It's being able to fulfill the Great Commission and walking out and doing ministry is what all this does. So good stuff, Thomas. Thanks for addressing those as an executive pastor interested in these things.
Nerds unite. That's what we do.
That's right.
If you're one of us, leave me a comment, please. Back me up. If you hated this and you said it's the most boring episode we've ever seen at Reach Right, say you're on TV and
and I didn't say that. Didn't say that. Said some people.
That's it. Let us know down in the comments what you think, or if you're on Team Thomas or Team Ian, I'd appreciate that.
That's funny.
Especially if you voted for me on that. So thanks, guys, for being a part of the Reach Right family. Hit the subscribe button, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.